From the studios of WBAA Public Radio in West Lafayette, this is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue University President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski, and we appreciate you listening to the show this month. And if ever you've got a question you'd like to make it on this program, you can email that to news@wbaa.org, and you can tweet your questions at WBAA News on Twitter. Well, let me start out with a question that came in from a listener. He says, I teach mathematics at an Indianapolis charter school. 95% of our students are on the federal free or reduced student lunch program. And he says, in order to succeed in higher education, particularly STEM fields, students need a very deep understanding of algebra and geometry. He says, the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics has convincingly and persistently proven conceptual understanding is indispensable for procedural fluency. Yet conceptual understanding simply takes longer to develop. He says, with the increased emphasis on STEM nationally, I worry that an unintended consequence is that we simply train students to answer test questions correctly in order to speed them along the track to higher education most rapidly. And he says he would appreciate your feedback on that idea.
Well, I think he's probably making a very good point. I don't know where computational accuracy and conceptual grasp where the line is between one and the other, but I would trust him on this question. I will just say that I think it's very important that Purdue is one of the few schools that requires 4 years of math of all its students, which I think is based on the fact that we know that math skills are important not only for those pursuing further study or a career in STEM disciplines, but for everybody. And that I do know, I've read it often, that one of the variables most closely associated with college success is 4 years of math in high school. Even if the student didn't take the most, the highest levels of math, and even if the student's grades were not the very best. So thanks to him or her for choosing the career they did. And for helping students, whether they're STEM-oriented or not, take this fundamentally important step along the way to a successful later academic career.
So, of course, you and I have talked on this program about Purdue wanting to open its own charter school in Indianapolis under very similar circumstances to what it sounds like was just described there. Is there already a plan in place, at least conceptually, to do that same sort of thing of have a lot of mathematics ingrained in those students when they finally matriculate?
I'm confident I'm answering accurately when I say absolutely. This, of course, is the Purdue Polytechnic Institute's program. They are heavily tilted toward math and science. I know that the design, which is still coming together, of the high school curriculum would be much the same.
So in terms of getting students to want to take those sorts of classes, getting them to want to choose that charter school over the multitude of different charter schools, there are ones that are focused on the arts and focused on the humanities. How do you get people convinced that this technical sounding training of lots of math and science is where they should be using those dollars that they are choosing to allocate?
I hope them. And believe that the word is spreading anyway. There are multiple indications of rising interest in STEM study, and in engineering and in academic pursuits like that among younger people. Second, the Purdue Polytechnic Institute is highly specific in offering career certifications. That is to say, fairly specific training that at least our college graduates can take to the marketplace. I would imagine there'll be something parallel to that in the high school that they hope to set up. One of my fond hopes for the high school is that it becomes a pipeline for inner city and first generation students, more of them, to come to Purdue. But I know it's part of the design that they can get it, those high school graduates ready for the world of work right away if they choose to go straight there or postpone higher ed. So I think a pretty plain career orientation at the high school may also attract some people. And then finally, just to be provincial about it, I think Purdue's name will attract students as they and their families look at all their high school options.
This is Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. Send your questions for this show to news@wbaa.org or tweet them at WBAA News on Twitter. I wanted to address a couple of topics that came up at the most recent Purdue trustees meeting. One of them was increasing your at-risk pay from 30 to 50% in your new contract. And you and I talked a little bit about this at the time. And we've talked also about having more at-risk pay among other administrators at the university. Is this at all a signal that the trustees would like to expand that philosophy to either more people or to having more at-risk pay in the average administrator's contract?
I think they've already made it plain that they believe that it's a sound and wise principle, and that it probably has a wider application than certainly than just my position or the ones that we are applying it to now. So, I guess you would say it's a reaffirmation of a signal I think they've sent a long time ago. I mean, what we're doing here is caught the notice of a lot of people elsewhere. We get compliments frequently. I got one from a questioner in an audience out of state last Thursday yet again. So we didn't do it to set a pattern for anyone else. We just think it's an appropriate way to approach the business of Purdue University. But yes, I think there are offices and officers that we could extend it to, and we'll be looking to do that.
It occurs to me I should ask you about the process of contracts generally, because Indiana famously is an at-will state. I would say there's a minority of employees in the state generally who are on contracts one way or another. What about Purdue thinking about instituting more contracts and more agreements with its especially high-level administrators? Is that something that we might see?
I doubt it. It's not a question I've thought much about. I never worked with a contract before. It's just been the practice for a long time.
For all intents and purposes, you had 2 4-year contracts in your last job.
Well, you could say that. I don't think in general that it will apply or has great application to other places. I guess we have coaches under contract, and then my job has historically been, but I'd have gladly taken the job without one. And I'm not thinking of a lot of other places where it would make good sense to me.
You mentioned coaches, and I think I have to ask, because I wonder if you're getting calls from people about Purdue's football team, which is 1-6 as we tape this, and there have been a number of people who say they don't want the current head football coach, Daryl Hazel, to see to the end of his 6-year contract that he signed. Are you getting people who are coming up to you, potentially even boosters who would be on the hook for significant fundraising dollars, who are weighing in on how they think the football team and its personnel should proceed?
Oh, of course we're hearing from folks, whether they've been donors or just fans. I go to all the games and I'm out in the crowd and down in the end zone and places asking people. So, of course, you hear folks who are hoping that we'll become more competitive, and obviously I do too. No, I mean, you can look for us to demonstrate our continued commitment to athletics and to football specifically. But I'll just end the answer where I often start. I'm really proud of the athletic program that we have. It's a high integrity program. It sets high standards and then enforces them. Our student athletes are real student athletes, taking real classes, getting honest grades. It's just, I think, so central. And by the way, we don't tax the students of this university or the citizens of the state, for that matter, to finance the athletics, which there are people who think that's just fine. I happen to think it's admirable that at Purdue our athletic program has found a way to pay for itself.
You said that you are committed to going forward with a successful football team and maintaining that. There are, of course, a number of people who say, well, change might do that. And so I guess what is the bigger weighing factor? The idea of maintaining faith in a coach who you've given a long-term contract to and who, let's face it, the athletics department would have to buy out at some large cost if they wanted to make that change, or to letting that person see to the end of a contract, something that you and I have talked a little bit about with yourself, seeing to the end of what you started, and then getting to that point and saying, now how do we reevaluate?
I don't have much to say about this, Stan, beyond the fact that it's the athletic director's job to make coaching evaluations and, in most cases, decisions. And I will say that I think Daryl Hazel's a tremendously admirable person. He's representing this university very well. He's only 2.5 years in, which means he's only had 1.5 years to recruit, and that's, of course, very central to long-term success. So there's constant evaluation, I know, by Morgan Burke and his team of all the coaches that we have. Many have been replaced just since I've been here by them. So it's they're performance based over there too, and but we'll leave that decision making where it ought to be right now.
You're listening to Indiana Public Broadcasting's Monthly Conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. We appreciate you being on the program with us today. Email your questions to news@wbaa.org or tweet them @WBAAnews on Twitter. You got a pretty good grade from the trustees recently, 90% of your at-risk pay for this year. How do you evaluate your own number? It was 88% last year. It's 90% this year. Did you do 2% better? Did the field shift 2%? What's your evaluation of that?
Well, we had a better year. My honest evaluation is that it'll be very, very hard. I'll be thrilled, but I'll be a little surprised if next year, or this year or next year, any future year is any better. I mean, you'll recall record applications, record retention and graduation rates, record patents, licenses, startup companies, all of that side of things, record donations. So a pretty darn successful year. And the formula that the board is using for the moment, when it was done whirring and spinning, produced 90. So I'd like to think that means we don't have – that we have an honest, rigorous system, you know, that where 100 is probably unattainable.
And the chairman of the trustees said as much in the most recent meeting.
Which is absolutely fine. You know, let's wind the tape back a little bit. When we started, this first contract I ever signed, I asked – for certain things. I asked for a reduction in the president's pay. That's not standard operating procedure, but I thought it was important to make some kind of a statement that from the top down, we are thinking about economy here and equity and so forth. I asked that a lot of that be put at risk, which we have done. And each year, a significant amount of money did not get paid, and that's just the way I thought it ought to be. And it's not a sham. It's not one of these bonus programs where somehow magically the recipient gets 100% every year. It's an attempt at an objective process with measurements that everybody can see. And so it's not perfect, and they'll try to make it better in future years. But I don't think this was a bad outcome in view of all the circumstances. And I will say that when people elsewhere look at what Purdue's doing, they tend to be highly complimentary compared to either the levels of pay, which, as you know, in our peer group, Purdue's current pay level is one of the lowest.
Well, let's talk about that for a mm-hmm. second, because you and I talked a little bit at the meeting about the idea that the person who succeeds you may indeed want a higher base salary or something like that. And we know full well from lots and lots of economic development type stories that pay is an important motivating factor to getting top talent in some cases. And I wonder if Purdue's pay is going to have to at least change its structure a little bit potentially to get somebody else in who's for instance, the person who normally becomes the president of a university is not normally the former governor of the state. In many cases, it's somebody who's a long-term academic who has risen to be a leader in their department or in being a dean, and then you move on to being a college president. These are people who in higher ed are well compensated in some cases, but then become dramatically better compensated when they become presidents. Is it worth thinking now about when your contract ends, changing the pay structure for that next person who may think about the money in a dramatically different way than you did?
It's a question for the trustees. They run the place. The current trustees felt that this set of arrangements I just summarized was right for Purdue right now. I think you're raising a very astute question. One day, we think now 2020, but it could happen sooner. There'll be a need to make an arrangement with some newly recruited president. Trustees are turning over all the time, so it'll be a different board to some degree by then, maybe totally. And they may have a totally different outlook. But yes, I think the trustees I know have one eye on that issue, that if we are way below IU and other like institutions when that arrives, that there'll be a significant adjustment, and that might be an issue too. But I think for the moment, they think, and I think, that this is an appropriate way to approach the compensation for my position, and I will just say the feedback we get from elsewhere is highly supportive.
You mentioned just there the extension of your contract from 2018 to 2020, and you said you could be gone sooner, and of course that's a possibility. You may get some highfalutin job offer somewhere else. But the trustees, it should be noted, are trying to entice you to stick to the end of that contract by offering what amounts to potentially $1 million extra dollars over the next 5 years just by being with the university on June 30th of each year. And is that a standard operating procedure, or is this above and beyond?
Well, it wasn't my idea, but but it wasn't original with them either. There are a lot of these in higher ed. And so it was a suggestion they made. I like what we're doing here. I love this university, the students in it, the mission that it has, great faculty that it has. And I'm happy to do this job I think under the circumstances, under the terms that we've set up. And so and I expect to feel the same way 5 years from now.
Could someone look at this from the outside and go, we see what happened with President Cordova and President Giske, and they were asked at around 65 years of age apiece to do what has been traditional, which is vacate the position, let somebody else younger come in and take it. If you stay to the end of your contract, you'll be 71 at the end of it. I know it's not polite to mention ages, so I apologize for that. But it's worth noting that they're asking you to stay 6 years beyond what has been normal, and they're providing you potentially some huge financial incentive to do that. Is that setting a precedent that the presidents of Purdue are going to be treated somewhat differently going forward?
Stan, I don't know. I guess we'll find out later.
Do you want to set a precedent in some way yourself?
No, I'm not out to set any precedents. I'm here to try to serve the institution well if I can, and I'm not looking to go anywhere else. I would hope by now that's pretty clear. When I talk about maybe not getting to 2020, it could be a health problem, it could be an accident, or I could, be embroiled in something that requires my leaving. That happens. You'll notice in higher ed, sometimes it's not even the president's action that necessitates it. So it's an uncertain world. I'm just looking to do the best I can, and I feel for the moment, at least, as an institution, we're doing well and making headway.
I wanted to ask you a little bit about the pay rubric, the at-risk pay rubric, because one of the things the trustees did was give you, so 30% of that is related to fundraising, things like that, and the trustees gave you 40 out of 30, essentially 133% on that. And granted, the university has had a very good fundraising year. Nobody disputes that to be the case. But it's worth pointing out that that is one of a couple of places where they went above and beyond what was in the original math. And if they had stuck to their original math, you would have earned 76% instead of 90%. Is that somewhat fuzzy math, or are they allowed that
discretion? It's quite conventional in other settings, business and elsewhere. There were fixed targets, right?
Sure.
Like in fundraising. We blew the doors off. We didn't get 100% of the target. It was way above that. And so they thought there ought to be some way to recognize that. Again, nobody claims it's a perfect system. But at the end of the day, in a year of records at Purdue University, when you shook it all up, it produced, what's a 90, a B? A B minus?
A minus.
Well, maybe today. not in the era where I grew up. But in any event, it's an eye of the beholder situation. But the dollars that will not be paid out are very real. And I think it was not a bad result. All things considered, but no, doing what they did is quite conventional. When a target is not only met but dramatically exceeded, it's pretty common for compensation committees and the like to reflect that somehow.
I mean, obviously, they had the ability to do it; they were within their rights to do it, and so they have. I wonder what you think that says about the weight that they put on fundraising as the job of the Purdue president, because...
Well, I don't think it should be more than 30%. I think it's at least weighted enough. It's a very important thing. We're entering a capital fund drive. I'm going to apply a lot of my time to that. But it's it should not predominate any more than that, in my opinion. Institutional excellence and reputation, extremely important. A part of this job, student success, arguably the most important part of this job. These other categories, I think, I would not want to see them de-emphasized in any way.
Well, they haven't been de-emphasized, but you'd have to agree that you just said yourself it shouldn't be more than 30%. Well, you got 40% for it from your at-risk pay, and it has been at least emphasized extra, the fundraising part has.
No, success got emphasized, Stan. Fundraising was still... just 30% of the formula. And, just as if we underperform this year, and we've got a high target, so it's going to be hard to hit. If we underperform, there'll be an appropriate reduction. You ought to ask the board why they thought this was right. But I do believe that whether it's at 90 or 88 or some lower percentage, it's hard to look at what's been done these last couple years, or the outcome, I should say, and not say that, well, to some extent, it's real and it requires good performance to even come close to getting the pay as the full pay of the job.
I wanted to ask you also about something else that came up at the trustees' meeting, which was the passage of the promotion and tenure document, which you and I have talked about a couple of times on this program. And there was a change that had been made or proposed initially by the Faculty Senate. And some say that it was handled not as well as it could have been. The Faculty Senate sent back in red ink and with lines through some lines that they didn't like in the original document. And that was actually left out. The trustees put back in a slightly different piece of language. But it did make one interesting change, which was it took out the word must, which was in that original passage. And it said you must demonstrate your mentorship to achieve tenure. And now it says mentorship will be documented. Mm-hmm. And we had communication from one of the trustees afterward who said, well, it's still our intention that this be a big thing.
Yeah, I don't know how you find this confusing. It is a requirement.
But the language is very ambiguous.
Let me tell you what's not ambiguous, Stan. Will be documented. Doesn't say should, could, may, will be considered. It says will be documented. I don't know exactly which wordsmith made the variation. I think maybe it's a better way of saying than what said before. But I'll just tell you this. It's clear, crystal clear, that future applications will have to have some documentation of involvement on behalf of students or engagement with students. And they're going to come to the provost, and then they're going to come to me. And if there's zero in there, they're going back. Is that clear enough for you?
Sure.
But okay. I mean, because I
but
can,
that's not
I
what
can,
the document says.
Stan, I was in all the conversations. I listened to debates. There's, I don't know how in the world you can confuse will with may, but it's not ambiguous. It is a requirement. And it's going to be, you know, I think seen that way. I don't know how else you can see it from the applicant side. If you were an applicant reading that language, would you send in an application that said nothing about the time you might have spent, the office hours you had, the coaching you provided? Would you send in nothing?
Oh, no. I think the applicants themselves are certainly going to provide that documentation. Yeah. I'm looking at it from the point of view of the tenure committee, and we talked to a number of professors who have sat on tenure committees, and they say a couple of things. They say, one, we're not referring back to this document, and two, they say that each individual application is taken on an individual basis. So, for instance, you don't judge a biology professor the same way you judge an English literature professor. And they say we try to take everybody on their own merits. And in addition to that, they say, look, and we all feel that mentorship is an important part. Nobody disputes
that. Okay, then
that.
Then there won't be an issue. But biology professors and history professors and all professors have one thing in common. They all have students.
Sure.
And you say they're not going to look at this document. I doubt that's what they meant to convey, because if that's the case, why were years spent preparing this document if the committees aren't going to look at it? And they may not look at it, but I'm going to look at it, and the provost is going to look at it, and we know exactly what it means. And if something comes in and there is no documentation, at least some showing of care and concern and personal interest in the success of students, then it'll be incomplete. That's the simplest way I know how to put it. But I just don't foresee that at all, because the language is so clear. And by the way, I think every professor I meet here does believe this is an important part of the job, maybe more so than ever now. And so quite apart from the clear language of the policy, I would anticipate they would proudly include, with all the rest of their credentials, some showing.
You certainly want to make the best case possible for tenure. There's no question about that. In just our last minute or so, this brings up an interesting question, which is, this is one of the first things that's happened under the tenure of Faculty Senate President Kirk Alter. And you and I talked a year ago about how you dealt with Patty Hart, the then Faculty Senate chair. And the two of these two people are very different in some ways. Do you have a different relationship with Chairman Alter than you had with Chairman Hart?
They're all different. You know, I've worked with four now. And they're all very, very different. And Paul Robinson, very different than David Williams, who followed him, Patty Hart, who followed David, and now Kirk, all very fine people. I've enjoyed each one, but there's variety is the spice, and there's a lot of variety in there. But, you know, I will say, I think this process, I think Kirk described it well. There was a lot of give and take and some jostling around. That's absolutely fine. In the end, we came down to a good product. It's 99%+ exactly as it came from the faculty, with a few adjustments like the one we talked about. And I enjoyed each of these people very much individually. I appreciate the extra burden they take on top of their teaching and their research. We'll work with whoever the Senate chooses each year.
All right. Well, thanks as always. We've run out of time, and these shows always seem to go very quickly.
I enjoy the chance. Thanks.
This has been Indiana Public Broadcasting's monthly conversation with Purdue President Mitch Daniels. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Have a good rest of your day.